Welcome, 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 everybody, to another edition of Toppins Talk. Today, we are blessed to be here with Abdel Rodriguez. Abdel, say what's up to everybody.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on this podcast today.
Great. So, Abdel, for those who don't know, runs a awesome goalkeeping brand, and we don't give enough love to the goalkeepers throughout, throughout not just the 90 minutes, but in general, I feel. So he does run Cronus, which is a unique individual brand. It is not your Nike, Adidas, etc. It is made for goalkeepers by goalkeepers. It is something really unique. So Abdel, I think it's a great idea for us to get just straight into it. So, how did Cronus start?
Cronus began back in 2013. It started off around the end of 2012, but officially it came into, conclusion around 2013, where the products came in and all that kind of stuff. Long story short, I was an assistant coach for, one of the best goalkeeper coaches in the country. And from then on, we started hearing these ideas or these thoughts about other coaches having their own glove brand. And they would mainly just have it just in the sense of, they wanted their goalkeepers to match. That was it. It wasn't any sort of quality behind it. It was just, black glove, blue glove, whatever color it was, so they could match. And the only difference between the goalkeepers were their cleats. And that's the first time that I ever, knew of someone making their own glove brand. So up until then, I was wearing your typical Nike, Adidas. When I played in college, my first year, I was able to wear Cels. When I played in Mexico, third division, I was wearing Rimat. So those are the four brands that I had, tried. But up until then, I was a huge Cels fan, and I had just committed to UNLV. And that Cels Breeze 2013 or 2012 edition was no longer going to continue. So I wanted to find something similar. So I made what we call these all-white Mickey Mouse gloves. And that's how it began. It was about five pairs. And the whole idea behind it was just that I had the gloves that I wanted to use for my first year at a D1 school. There was no thought behind it on making it into a brand, nothing like that. It was just, I need my product so I can play. And I wanted it to be very, very similar to the comfort I had from Cels at that time. And from then on, those five became 15, became 30, and it just continued and continued until about 2014, when you randomly had professionals buying them all of a sudden, and we had no idea that these pros were buying them. So from then on, that's when kind of the brand itself began as a brand.
I mean, that's an amazing story, first of all. So when we said in the beginning, four keepers buy keepers, I mean, that's textbook right there, right? Like that's exactly how that started out. What I need to know as somebody who's not a goalkeeper is I really need to know, Nike, Adidas, etc. They always seem to be kind of trying to push the envelope a little bit with their tech and like what they're doing here and there. But when I talk to actual keepers, it doesn't always seem like it lands, right? Like it doesn't always seem like the tech was made for the keepers. It was almost like it was tech made for the sake of making tech or labeling it something marketable, So what makes the Cronus glove a keeper's best friend? What is it, for keeper, by keeper that you enjoy out of it?
So going back to the beginning of it, at the time, let's not think about the first five pairs. Let's say about the first 30, the first 50, I couldn't afford to buy more, I couldn't afford to buy in bulk or whatever it was. So I would create at 50 and then from then on, continue. And then, produce another 50. And the big thing that helped me out at that time was how fresh the latex was. I was importing latex from Germany and all I could make was 50 at a time. So I would only import enough to make those 50. And the latex was literally, you're talking about 2-3 weeks old, it's as fresh as it is. And up to today now, 7 years, 8 years down the road, I maintain the same exact thing. So So I can easily go in and mass produce whatever I need all at a time. So we all have it in the warehouse and, you know, it's ready to go, but I choose to, you know, spend a little bit more in the sense of keeping that same thought process, because at first it's what helped us out a lot. It's what the goalkeepers loved. It's what I love, that, you know, kind of like that new card smell you always had with the gloves. You would open up the gloves and the freshness was there. And in the sense of literally having a 2 to 3 week old shelf life of your glove, and not something that sometimes like big, large glove brands or, you know, Nikes, Adidas, you have the new Nike Touch coming out, but it's been, you know, on some coaches' hands since last year. So they've been sitting in warehouses for about a year until they fully go out, which is understandable of that size of a company. But when you talk about, like you said, your average goalkeeper that needs something to perform, the freshness that Cronus offers is what sets us apart, in the sense of this glove is literally made, you know, it'll expire around the same time that from the moment you bought your milk to the moment it goes bad. You know, that's the life it has of how long it's been, you know, produced, and you're getting it as fresh as possible. So it's, in my sense, a keeper's best friend, because it's the latex that, you know, most keepers like. You know, a lot of them will buy maybe a not so pretty design, but my latex is always top notch, and that's what you care about.
Right. So it comes down to, this glove isn't made to be white, blue, black, whatever, to match your kid. This glove is made to make sure that you get the most out of it. And that's kind of what makes that the keeper's best friend, right? It's not some cool flashy material. It's that, you know, fresh, everything is made, you know, pretty much to order at that capacity. You know, and so that's real special. And so, I mean, hats off to you guys for that.
So. Thank you. No, it's something, you know, like that quote says, keep doing things that have worked, you know, in business, you do that. If it got you there, just keep doing the same thing. So in the beginning, it's very important to be able to catch the attention of someone. And why not continue doing that? You know, why not continue offering the same exact, you know, thought process behind it of offering freshness, offering, you know, we try to push the innovative design on the envelope as well, but in the sense of keeping the same core values of the fresh latex, that it's no much older than 3 weeks before it's in your hand.
Right. I mean, if you're looking at, and I just have to point it out, again, this is not a marketing podcast, but this is just, you know, you got to give credit where it's due. The prices on the gloves are also really reasonable for something that's been made really fresh, which is something that you don't see very often, right? If you get something, and I'll point over to, you know, boot brands where you get handcrafted cleat from Italy and it costs you, you know, a premium as opposed to what you're paying for, you know, your stateside cleats. You know, the Cronus, you know, the gloves are very reasonably priced, and they're, you know, so just hats off to you guys again for keeping it at that capacity. So not only is it fresh, but it is affordable for people, which, to your point earlier, is something that's also really crucial to get people in on.
Yeah, definitely. I think the price point is something that I've been a big stickler on keeping it at a, you know, at a decent price, where, you know, I always, my whole world revolves of, would my father buy this, you know, when I was growing up, in the right. sense of, Is it good enough for him to spend his hard-earned money when we didn't have much and say, okay, I can do this because this will last him whatever time, you know? And it's a green light with him on that one, or my thought price on, yeah, he would do this. And I feel I'm sticking to the values of what I was taught, but in the sense of, no parent could come back and say, hey, for what we paid, it's been pretty crappy. You know, it's going above and beyond to maintain that their hard-earned dollar continues back onto their kid's hands. Yeah, so like I was saying, you know, it's always the core values on, would my father at that time when I was 12, 13, be able to afford this product, you know? And even in the sense of the Cronus Academy training, it's all around the same thing. Would he be comfortable spending that amount knowing that what, you know, we offer is worth it for, at that time, let's say his son, you know, where I truly try to stick again on those core values of what he taught me, in the sense of, keep offering, you know, something that no one will complain about because they get more value out of it versus the $80 that they spent.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So that actually segues us really well into just an academy being open on a brand, you know, we have Nike Academy, obviously we have some Adidas Academy, et cetera, but it took them a longer time to, you know, to open those up. But yours was kind of immediate and it almost seems to be growing with the brand, which is really interesting. So what was the idea behind the Academy? Was it just you know, you saw an opportunity there? Was it you didn't think enough detail was going on? What's the plan there?
So Cronus itself has two heads. You have Anton Trifonov, and then you have myself. Anton played Champions League, played, you know, Europe qualifiers, played Olympic qualifiers, all these great things around, you know, what many kids aspire to be. You know, if you search up a few goals on him, he's been scored on by Torres, Cristiano, Quaresma. So it's a lot of big-time names that we know nowadays. So somehow I ended up returning from Mexico after playing professionally out there, finished my high school here, and somehow ended up in Ohio, where he somehow ended up there as well. And I became an assistant to his, you know, goalkeeper, whatever, private sessions you can call it at the moment. We both, you know, kind of hit it off as friends, and we continued. And then Cronus, you know, started itself on that, around that note. But the whole time, I had already had 2-3 years of experience of developing kids under him. And we just continue that as it goes. So in a way, Cronus Academy started before the Cronus brand without us even knowing it, you know?
Gotcha.
Anton at that moment had maybe 3-4 kids that he was doing privately, kind of on the side. And by the time I returned to Las Vegas, we left it at about 75 kids. To then now we're working about 300 kids on a weekly basis. So we oversee the development of a lot of kids just in Cleveland, Ohio area. Here in Las Vegas, you're working at, you know, anywhere between 75 to about 110 kids on a weekly basis. So in the sense, like you said, that itself was another one that kind of just came out of nowhere. You know, for years, I worked very hard to kind of step away from the coaching world, not because I didn't like it, but just because I felt like I wasn't there fully for what the kids needed me to be in. And again, with the core values of, if you're not into this fully, why would, you know, 15 years down, you know, memory lane, would my dad invest into a kid who isn't into this fully with his own son, you know? So right. I was trying to step out of it in that way, but it just came from me playing to not no longer pursuing the professional dream, to then just, that was my only way of, you know, hearing the ball getting hit or whatever it was, and it right. created my own little love with it, you know. And for years, a lot of businessmen had told me, like, you need to step away from that because, like, that's not where you need to be. You need to be here, hire other people. But at the end of the day, you know, it was Anton and I who created this shape of developing kids that has worked. And even though we do have, you know, coaches in LA, coaches in, you know, Pennsylvania, coaches in Dallas, coaches in many other places that have continued the same Cronus methodology, I would feel, you know, that I need to still be on the field. And at the same time, it's my stress reliever. You know, a lot of times parents tell me, like, oh, we can't believe that you do this. And I'm like, well, this is what my fun part is, you know,
right.
My tedious job is sitting behind the computer, dealing with colleges, with sales, with whatever that is. That's some of the boring part, you know. But if you tell me, you know, I could go train and design gloves, you know, to me, that's a great day.
Yeah, spot on. So that brings us to the last point, which is, what is the plan for the future? You know, you have two heads there. You got an academy. You got sales going on there. Clearly, you're making a great product. So, you know, what's down the line? Kind of where do you want to see it going?
So we actually have a third brand by the name of Cronus Pathway. It's been around for about a year now. It launched about January 2019. And it goes back, again, you know, my family is a really big way that I create my brands, in the sense of, we came here. I'm a first-generation Mexican-American, to the sense of, when it came down to my college world, there was no idea behind what to do. You know, I didn't even know if I was going to attend college. I was just playing in Mexico. I thought that dream was going to come in and happen. And then I come back and it's like, well, we got to attend somewhere now, you know, you got to go get an education. Right. And I remember telling my dad, saying, like, I got all these full rides. Like, what do I do? And he's like, I don't know. Like, I've never, you know, I had no idea if people would pay for your education in order for you to pay for them. And I just remember him telling me, like, well, whoever covers the most, just go there because we don't have a financial resource to, you know, kind of help you out.
Right.
So that's the way I went about it. You know, it was my first question when my recruiting process of, is it free? Yes or no? Because if it's not, I don't think I can do this. And luckily, you know, my education was all paid for. And it went back with the pathway now. You know, we developed a sense of a network through what we've done via Cronus itself, via Cronus Academy, of developing the Cronus kids who then go on and play to your Ohio State, your UCLA's, who the coaches then, you know, whether they don't know Cronus as the brand, well, they know that they come from an academy by the name of Cronus. So the name is growing there where coaches feel comfortable recruiting from us. So right. When we brought in the pathway, you know, we were able to help out a kid from Guatemala who was here on a student visa, who has been playing his whole high school career, very low income family. And there was no help being, you know, with his recruitment process. So we were able to get him from the school that he was playing for to a Division II on a full ride. And all these kind of things are what we do, where we take low income goalkeepers at the moment and just kind of expose them in the sense of what a lot of, you know, a lot of kids don't have due to the financial lacks in life, you know. So we basically expose them to our network of, you know, the colleges that we provide products to, or the coaches that have recruited from us in the past. In the sense of, here you go. Here's another, maybe not a Cronus developed kid, but here's another Cronus kid that we believe will help out your program. So far right now, you know, we've been able to help out a lot of families, a lot of low income families, to get into the 4-year college world. And you know, if everything goes well, our first class of the 2019 Cronus Pathway kid would graduate around 2023, 2024, depending on where they go in education. And you know, at that point, we'd be able to accomplish a real big milestone where we've been able to provide, in a sense, education that probably wasn't going to have to go into the workforce right away, right after high school, whatever it is. And now they're able to at least continue that, those 4 or 5 years of their dream, you know, playing basically for free, you know. And I think at the end of the day, I'm not a parent. I don't know if you are, but my mom was, you know, I think her most proudest moment was the graduation that I was able to have, you know. And that's, I think, for any immigrant parent or any low income parent, the fact that you can finally have a child that, you know, you can quote unquote is educated or whatever it is, it's kind of like the proudest moment. And to put not have any strain on them where they graduate debt free, mom and dad didn't have to take out some sort of crazy second mortgage or whatever it is, I think it lifts a lot of stress that life already has on them.
Look, I mean, if if anybody needed to understand it here, I mean, I'm also a first generation American in my family. And when they talk about the American dream, and when they talk about, you know, making a difference and having an impact, I mean, this is case in point. Yeah. So, you know, kudos to you guys for taking an internal look and deciding that, hey, this is something that we could really help people with. And, yeah. You know, I am sure that those kids are all going to be appreciating it in the same capacity for you. So that is, you know, that's an overview on Cronus as a brand, but that's not enough. So we're going to keep going. We're going to go into keeper culture next. Okay. So keeper culture is just a fun little piece that we're going to do here. We're going to do a little coaching piece at the end as well. And then we're going to wrap this up. So keeper culture, let's get a couple short answers on these guys. How has keeping changed since the time that you started playing the game? So obviously you said that you played, you know, professionally in Mexico, you played college ball, you played all over. And so, you know, you have a lot of experience and you've seen a lot. How has the game changed, and we'll say the past decade, for keepers?
It's funny because, like, I always tell people that I was able to experience two different worlds. You know, I was able to experience, you know, the 1990 development where, you know, those coaches would believe in one way, and then entering into, you know, the quote unquote, the modern era, you know. The weird thing of that was that as someone who was developed into Latin culture, you know, the footwork for goalkeeper has always been part of it. It's always been something in Latin America of being able to play with their feet. You know, it's something that, you know, has never really, really not happened. You know, if you even look into Spain, how technical the goalkeepers are, it's always been part of it, you know. So I don't think it's changed to the point of, oh, we have to change training. But what has changed is that everyone else is, you know, now it's fully forcing it. And now you're forcing it at a higher level. You know, it's no longer you're good with your feet, it's you're exceptional with the passes that you're creating. You're becoming that extra goal, that extra player on the field. A lot of things that have changed, in my opinion, has been the role that the goalkeeper has, which whether you want to say feet or non-feet, you're now really considered into, you know, as a high investment. If you look at the transfer window that happened, 2 years ago, when you got Ederson, Kepa, Alisson, all these big-time keepers getting bought, you know, here in the States that we have Zach Steffen getting purchased, and he's going into an environment that is probably going to be one of the most environments that are going to force him to play out the back. It becomes that now we're being invested into. So the culture itself, obviously the technical aspects change, tactical aspects change, but I think now it's like it's a priority to have a goalkeeper that will fit into your world or into your culture as a head coach. You know, we have the ugly reality that happened to Joe Hart, where didn't fit into that, and his career has spiraled down since then. And you know, I think a lot of us have a soft spot when you have someone that was such at the top of the world at one point, and then, you know, a year ago was fighting to even find a contract, and today he's at Tottenham, and we're hoping that he comes back, you know, just for the goalkeeper union to see someone like that not just kind of get forgotten, because at the end of the day, he is arguably one of the best English goalkeepers that's came out, you know, in a while. And so I think when it comes to culture, it's just that now you have a high demand on exceptional goalkeepers. You know, I don't think we've ever heard about keepers charging 300 something pounds a week or whatever, like De Gea does, you know, and it's ridiculous to think that, because back then, you know, when you think about development or me, myself as a child, it was just like, oh, put the fat tall kid in goal, you know, and now it's like, you know, can we find the best? I need a good goalie. I need someone that fits into my world of coaching that plays out the back. So I think there's a high demand in my world of development at a young age. You know, coaches want them to be able to do X, Y, and Z so young, and forget a lot of times that they're still kids. But it's in a sense a good thing, because you start to weave out the kids who aren't mentally there yet, you know, and it's happening at the young age of 11, 12 versus, you know, 16, 17.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. Now, actually, let me ask you just a quick, maybe just a couple sentences on it. On playing out of the back, we've seen a lot of high profile errors when it comes to playing out of the back, because keepers are being pressured into doing that. Where sometimes, like, if you give it the good boot up the field, yes, you may not have maintained possession in that capacity, but you also, you know, I would point the finger at Ederson has faced a couple of criticisms because of that. Now, does that boil down to, you know, as a keeper, does that boil down to, you know, it's his instinct now? It's been so hard drilled into him that he has a desire to play it with his feet out of the back as opposed to booting it up? Or is that, you know, at that level, do you find that it's still a conscious decision to say, okay, well, I'm going to do this, you know? Or, you know, like I said, is it more instinct at that point?
I would give you one more. I think it's a command from, you know, from the captain of the whole ship. You know, if Pep tells you that this is what we need, this is what you got to do. You know, it's as simple as that. You know, if the leader of the team is telling you, like, we're going to play out and I need you to find this out. I mean, perfect example is what happened a week and a half, 2 weeks ago to Adrian with Liverpool. You know, really just wonder, like, why would he just play that ball? But we don't know. It's easy for us to judge in the sense that we don't know what Klopp, what Pep, what all these guys are telling them. And it's like, no matter what, play it out. And yeah, they're pros and they can make the conscious choice of, I don't feel comfortable with this. But I think it would sound worse that the goalkeeper in the 1% to say, I don't feel comfortable with this, because you should. That's why you're there. That's why you get paid to do this, you know, to figure it out, to feel comfortable with it. So, and going to what your two options were, I think it's just the fact that they're just so confident and that the mistake isn't going to happen. Right. And it does, you know, it happens, you know, every now and then it happens. And obviously when you look at, you know, the Neuers, the Ederson, the Addisons who play out the back so much, you know, you're racking up touches that one or two are going to fail you. It's going to happen, you know? And I think it's just, you hear a lot of commentators saying, like, ah, see, you should have just booted out the back, but it's part of it. It's part of it as a keeper life that you're going to make some sort of mistake and it's going to come right back to haunt you right away, you know, and it is what it is. You just turn the shoulder and continue living our life we live. One of my coaches told me this quote, and it's so realistic to what our life is. And it's the best you can start off in the game is the moment you start off. So the best you can do is leaving the score that you started off with, which is zero. You can only go down from there. You can't go up. You can't eat. That's it. You can only go down from the moment the game starts. And it sucks to think that my best performance is going to be the moment it starts, and that's all I'm trying to hold on to, that the zero, you know? Right. And it can only get worse. My day can only get worse. It doesn't get better. It only gets worse, you know? So that's the reality of it, you know?
I feel that. Yeah. So, all right, now let's go here for a second. Just very short, quick fire. Are there any unspoken codes when it comes to keepers? Is there an unspoken thing where it's like, you know, as far as goalkeeper union goes, like, you know, it could be within a team or when you're speaking about keepers or what have you. Is there a secret code amongst goalkeepers?
I don't know about a secret code. I think there's a union, you know. I think, you know, we're in these forums on Facebook or whatever, which is, you know, we're just all cheering each other up because it just sucks sometimes, you know, like, oh man, like this ball went through my legs. I don't know what happened. It's like, dude, it happens, you know, but no one else knows that. No one else understands that. And for example, me as a coach, when, you know, I train, you know, 8 out of maybe the top 10 2007 born goalkeepers in Vegas. So they're all entering that, you know, that they're 13 or they're turning 13. They're entering that ego time where they're now feeling like, okay, I'm the best one. And how do you maintain, you know, these 7 boys that are slowly becoming, you know, young men, in the sense of we're here to train without there being any sort of ego in your way? But it goes back to the unspoken culture that we have of you're here to get better. I'm here to get better. I know how it feels to get, you know, land on my ribs for literally the whole hour of training, or sometimes getting hit in my stomach or whatever. I know these pains that you go through. So we resemble with that. You know, if you're in notice in pro games or any sort of games, it's the keepers, you know, smacking each other, the high five, a hug or whatever, because right. I don't know you, but I know you go through it because I go through it, right. You know? And so I don't know about unspoken rules, but, you know, we have that culture of, you know, we're brothers or, you know, brother and sister in the sense of, you know, you have amazing women goalkeepers out there that, you know, we tend to forget about, you know, and we tend to view, you know, sometimes the role of the woman goalkeeper as less than as a man. You know, I hate when coaches will use, oh, look, she's a girl and she's doing better than the boys, or, you know, kind of in the sense of as a punishment towards the boys, when at the end of the day, they're the same thing. They're human and they're being developed in the human way. And we shouldn't look at gender in the sense of because she's a girl, we're going to take it easier. And because they're boys, we're going to go harder. You know, there's exceptional goalkeepers out there in the world that could probably hang with top goalkeepers as well. You know, it's just the fact of that we need to view them as what they are, just a goalkeeper union. And, you know, I know what you go through. I know what she goes through, and it sucks sometimes, but we're all here together.
So that's it. I mean, it's not secret rules or anything like that. It's actually the opposite, where it's like, just be there for other goalkeepers, you know? Yeah. So.
Yeah, no. And sometimes you hear that. Sometimes you read in the forums when, you know, some of the guys are going after some of the other guys, and it's like, man, it kind of sucks that you as a goalkeeper look at it this way, because you know what it is. You know, you know what it is to be chipped. I don't know if you know what it is to be chipped, but I know. Yeah. I know what it is to be chipped, and people saying like, seriously? And it's like, dude, don't even say anything to me right now, you know? But no one else knows that, you know? No one knows the feeling of literally they're going in on us. The goals go in on us, and I'm the one, even though sometimes your defender comes in and gets the ball in the net, I'm the one that picks it out the net 99% of the time. I know what it is to think like, crap, I could have done more, or I should have done this, and you're playing it through your head the whole time, and you're trying to figure it out, you know? So there's a lot of things like that that only we know about.
All right, so next, and this is actually, we're going to merge 2 points here, and it's going to be, what, as a goalkeeper, what mistakes do you see commonly defenders make that could maybe help defenders that are listening play a little better, play a little more cohesively? And just like, do you have any pet peeves as a goalkeeper? You know, so Those are, I guess, two in one question there for you. What can defenders do a little better to help themselves mistake wise? And, you know, do you have anything that that really grinds your gears when you're in the net?
I mean, it's just, you know, it goes back, you know, our best friend in that game is that center back. You know, that's the guy that we usually create the relationship with, because, you know, they center backs do good with a good goalkeeper, and goalkeepers do well with a great, you know, center back behind. I think in my world, when it comes to the youth world, I think the biggest thing that we need to teach, the fact is that they're a team. You know, a lot of times we kind of isolate the goalkeepers one side and then isolate the team on the other side, when, you know, you got to merge that line, that back line. You got to form that sort of bond between just the main center back, whoever it is, and the goalkeeper himself, so they understand each other. They understand where he's going to be or she's going to be. And I think we need to also develop in the sense of trusting, you know. I see a lot in the youth world where, you know, you hear like, oh, they don't listen to me. And why not? Why don't they listen to you? Because at the end of the day, we need to figure out why isn't the coach doing something of whatever the keeper says, you know, trust in it. Don't just create your own mind, because, you know, at the end of the day, like we just said, it's going to go in through that guy. So might as well try to see whatever he's seeing or she's seeing, because we need to remember that, you know, I need to lead in the back. And if you're not helping me lead, we're going to get screwed together, you know,
right.
I think that's one of the things that we need to, just do is just like, okay, I trust you. You trust me. We work as a unit. And if you say go left, I go left, even though if maybe I don't think it's right, you know, we got to figure it out, because there's something you're seeing that I don't see. And I think going into my biggest pet peeves, I think it's one of those where there's nothing like me being able to read the play and I'm trying to set you up because I could see what's happening. And right. because of you not doing your job, we get scored on. You know, even though I'm right. screaming at you to do this, to do that, it's one of the biggest things, you know. Obviously, you know, the typical, come on, man, after we get scored on, I think that one really grinds my gears, because it's just like, you try to put this on, you know, you're getting go, you know. When it comes to training, I think another one of my pet peeves is how much we focus on the team and how much we put the goalkeeper aside. You know, we're just kind of there warming up with our feet until it's time to shoot. And then we just get blasted on for the remaining 30 minutes of training. And coaches are like, all right, man, you did a great job today. It's like, well, what did I do? Just dove around for half an hour. I'm exhausted. You know, like what did we really get out of that? And to this day, I haven't met a coach who could tell me otherwise. I don't think there's any drills, any sort of tactical formation or anything that allows a goalkeeper and the team to both get something out of training sessions. Right. Because, you know, last night I was observing a training session. The coach is working on his goalkeeper and they're working a corner kick. But right. the moment the goalkeeper comes down and collects all the corner kicks, he's yelling at the team because they're hitting it in the range of the goalkeeper. So it goes back to, this isn't a training session for the goalkeeper. It's a training session to score, you know. Right. So then it changes off that now it's an offensive. And now you're just hoping that the goalkeeper maybe makes a save, you know.
Right.
So we need to figure that out, that the goalkeepers need to be with the goalkeeper coach. And then you need to find a way to isolate them and to bring them in the right moment, you know, to combine your unit. But not, I'm going to destroy my goalkeeper in the sense of working tactical, you know, crosses, whatever you want to do, you know. So right. those are pet peeves in the goalkeeper world, to get blasted off half an hour and just to do drills that benefit us for nothing.
All right, so we have 2 minutes left here. So we have 2 minutes left, and I just need to know, and I need to know for the youth of America. So I need to know in 2 minutes or less, what is the best guidance you can give young goalkeepers, and what is it that's going to make you better as a goalkeeper?
I think I could answer that one with, you know, the same answer, and it's just find the keeper coach at a young age. Find someone that, a lot of times in America, we tend to think, oh, he, she played D1, therefore they know what they're doing.
Right.
When the reality is that you can't trust an 18-year-old through 22-year-old kid who is still trying to figure out their own life, with the development right. of your child's life. You know, a lot of times we see how a lot of kids get screwed over in youth soccer because they were developed incorrectly or they were trusting someone that they shouldn't have trusted in. And you can't blame that person either. They're still learning themselves, you know. So I would go in and, you know, trust into someone that has, you know, in the sense, some sort of resume of, look what I've done. This is what I can do. And I don't say, I don't want to say, you know, with some sort of a guarantee, because you can't really guarantee outcomes of years down the road, but that there's been other proven factors, you know. For example, I have, you know, a lot of goalkeepers from the Cruins Academies that have gone out and played, you know, professionally, national team, whatever it is, you know, top programs in collegiate soccer, where at least I would feel that my father would feel comfortable putting me there, you know, like, oh, these guys know what they're doing. It looks professional. Right. And I think that's a misconception where the goalkeeper tends to fight. Do I go to keeper practice where I know it's for me? Or do I go to my team practice because my coach is telling me I have to go there because he's gonna right. He needs me in goal to save all these shots for half an hour. And you need to pick and choose. And it, maybe it goes more towards parents of, you need to put your son or daughter where they're going to succeed in the position that they're developing in, you know. Throw them into their keeper training and force them to be there.
There you go. So, look, I mean, I have to say, and I don't know, I usually have a co-host with me, but I got to say, I really appreciate you giving us the time to, you know, to go over not only Cronus, but what makes a goalkeeper and what, you know, to expect going forward keeper-wise. And, you know, I'm going to go ahead and sign off for us, but why don't you just let people know where they can reach you for Cronus and, you know, where to follow you guys on social media, just so that, you know, they can get the most out of the experience.
Yeah, I mean, on social media, you know, you can just type in Cronus. You can, you know, if you just want to Google it, we'll pop up. My personal social medias are just Abdel RDZ. So it's A-B-D-E-L RDZ, shortened for Rodriguez. But yeah, I mean, those are the two best outcomes. And from there, you'll find everything about whether it's me, myself, the staff, you know, Cronus, all the, you know, the underlying things we have, like the academy, the pathway, whatever else we can do. So through all that, you know, we're just trying to create a great umbrella of being able to take kids from, you know, from youth sports into the collegiate sports while guiding them with, you know, better products, better equipment, protective equipment. And if they absolutely need our help, to be able to make that contact for them into the college world.
There we go. So just so everybody knows, we will go ahead and link up all the pages for Cronus when we do post the episode on Instagram. And until then, I am your host, Tim Camaraj, at Footy Coogee on Twitter. You can always find Top Ends Talk on Instagram at Top Ends Talk, and on Twitter at Top Ends Talk _. We will catch you later. Thank you so much.
Thank you.